Is Parshas Kisisa. Parshas Kisisa is unique. What is unique about Parshas Kisisa? It is the only way, I think we mentioned this week, it's the only, we discussed Purim Katan, it's the only parsha that's not included in the Shoivavim. Shoivavim. We know that Shoivavim is the series of weeks where we do tshuva, starting with Parsha Shemos, the Rosh Hashanah of Shoivavim, Shemos, the Eir Bo, B'Shalach Mishpatim, and then there's Yisro Mishpatim, and then there's Shoivavim Tat, Tat is test, so some people have accustomed to observe 2 more weeks, Tumah Tetzaveh, and then the Mogen Avram writes, there's Shoivavim, and then there is Shoivavim Tat, and then the Machnirim, the extremists, who like to fast, the Yesh, some say Yesh also should fast, Vayakel Pikude. Vayakel Pikude. So if you take the Magen Avram, if you start with Shoivavim Tat, and then you take the Magen Avram, Vayakel Pikude, basically it's the entire Chumash Shemos is part of Shoivavim. From beginning to end is Shoivavim. The only one that's missing is Parshas Kisisa. Right? Shoivavim goes from Shemos all the way through Mishpatim. Then there's a sheet that says Shoivavim Tat. Tat is Tumah Tetzaveh. Then B'Magen Avraham V'Yesh Oyim V'Yakov P'Kudei. So there's only one parsha that's missing. You might as well say the entire Chumash Shemos. The reason why there's no meaning to observe Shoivavim, to fast 1 day a week during the entire Chumash Shemos, is because there's one parsha that L'Kol L'Chol Adeos is left out. And which parsha is that? That is Kisisa. Why is Kisisa left out of Shoivavim? So the answer is because we have the ultimate kapara. We have the Machsa Shekel. It's the only thing, it's the only parasha from beginning to end in the entire Chumash Shemos where it says, L'chaper al nafshoy seichem. Giving the Machsa Shekel, V'lokachto es kesef ha-kipurim. Me'eis b'nei Yisrael v'nosato Yisrael avodas oil b'oed v'hoyol l'vnei Yisrael l'zikoron l'vnei Hashem l'chaper al nafshoy seichem. So it just goes to show how powerful the parsha, the sedra, the kedusha that lies in the Kriya Satorah. When you learn about Machsa Shekel, whose purpose is to give kapar for Klal Yisrael, that is such a powerful experience, you don't need a fast. It does not need to be nichlal in the series of fast days that we observe to some degree, starting with Shemos all the way through Chumash Vayikra. And that is what it says in the Mefarshim, so to underestimate the Koyach of Kisisa. Now, along those lines, the Kedusha of Kriya Satorah, there is a legend. I don't know, it's a legend, it's a minug. There is a tradition from Tzaddikim that when a person gets an aliyah in shul, unexpectedly, unplanned, you come to shul and just somehow Hashem puts a machshav into the mind of the gabbai, you know, I will give you an aliyah today, and they call you up Yamo, and you get an aliyah, it is a minor prophecy. Hashem is speaking to you. Hashem is speaking to you, giving you a message. And when you get an aliyah, when you don't expect to happen, you get an aliyah, even if it's Shabbos Mincha, it's during the week, it's Shabbos, there's a message for you in the aliyah that you have received. And you should review that, dear aliyah, read the psukim with Rashi, and look carefully, and there's certainly going to be something in the psukim or in Rashi which is going to trigger a thought relating to something that you are involved in your personal life. Every person always has dilemmas, is always involved in some type of situation, and you're always seeking guidance, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving you a matana. He's giving you a message. The message is clearly there. It's in the parsha. It's in the Rashi. It's there. If you got this aliyah, the message is there. There is such a concept. I have a sefer called the Goel Hagra, a very beautiful elaboration of the Goel Hagra. And part of the sefer, he says that it's not just the Goel Hagra. If you want to see guidance, messages from the Kodesh Baruch Hu, I mean, there are people in a very high madrega, very holy people. You can walk around and everything that happens, you can see that Kodesh Baruch Hu is speaking to you. But not everyone is such a high madrega. But it's not such a difficult thing that it happens. It happens to everyone. Every once in a while, you come to shul, they give you an aliyah. They give you an aliyah. There's a message in that aliyah for you. Are you going through a dilemma in life? Everyone has dilemmas. Look at the parasha, you'll see something. Where do we find the makar for this? Prove to me that this is correct, right? I just told you it's a very nice thing. It says, I can show you some that say this, but it's very hard to find a makar in Chazal for such an early source for this. It's this week's parasha, because the aliyos have been arranged from ancient times. The order of the aliyos, the way they've been arranged, must go back at least 1,000 years. At least 1,000 years of how the aliyos are arranged. And there's a tradition that the parasha is very lopsided. The first two aliyos are massive. The second aliyah is massive. It goes on and on and on and on. And then you come to the third aliyah and you have all these micro aliyahs until the end of the parasha. What happened? Why is it so lopsided? You don't want to insult the Levi. The Levi, the Egel begins early in the parasha. And if you break up the parasha naturally, it would result that the Levi would get a chelik of the Maisa Egel. And being that the Levim were not shaykh, were not nichshal in the Egel, Mila Hashem Elai. We don't want to insult the Levi, therefore the Levi has no chelik in the Egel, so we go out of our way to arrange these massively long aliyos in order not to insult the Levi. Now we do this a second time. I saw this yesterday. It's very interesting, is that we know that on a tiny sibur we lay in this week's parasha, on a tiny sibur vayechal Moshe, and we lay in the Yud Gimel Milei Sarachanim. Why is that so? So the reason why it's so is because of this week's parasha, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe was mis- Hashem said, I can't forgive them 100%. I'm not going to punish them now, but you should know that in all future generations, whenever they are deserving of sin, a punishment for a sin, I will punish them doubly. I'll punish them for what they have done, and I'm also going to add a partial payback for the chate of the eagle. I'm not going to punish the eagle now, but I'm going to punish them bits and pieces over a long period of time. So therefore, every time we have a tiny sibor, it's an Eis Tzara. If it's an Eis Tzara, we have to acknowledge that the Tzara that we are experiencing at this time is partially because of things that we're not doing correctly today, because of whatever it is, but also, every time we experience an Eis Tzara, it's a pasuk, we are also being partially punished for the Chet or Egel. What did Moshe Rabbeinu do to be mechaper on the Chet or Egel? The Yud Gimel Midos Sarachanim. It's this week's part. It's all of the events. So therefore, it's appropriate every time there is a tiny sibor. We're not just selecting something that's appropriate. We're selecting something that's 100% on the mark, because every Eis Tzara is always v'yoyim poti pokadeti. And at that point, when just like at the Chet or Egel, Moshe Rabbeinu went up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'yichal Moshe, and Moshe was taught the Yud Gimel Midos Sarachanim with the Luchos. That's exactly what is necessary to be done in the time of an Esra because of Yom Pokti Pokadati. Now, notice, on a regular Tainas Sibar, the Tziva participates in the Kriya Satara. When we begin the laning by Yechal Moshe, and we come to the Pasuk Shuv, Mecharon HaPecha V'Nachem Al Hor Oli Amecha, the whole Sibar responds. On the third Aliyah, Hashem, everyone, the entire tzibur says, Hashem, Hashem, kol rachum lechanon. And then we say, Vayom Hashem, salach tichid varecha. But take note that in the second aliyah, the aliyah of Levi, the salach, that's the fourth time I made this mistake. Okay, the fourth time this week I made this mistake. Okay? But take note, this is very interesting, that in the middle aliyah, the tzibur does not participate. They only together respond, Shuv Mecharon HaPecha, and the end, the third aliyah, but the Levi, how come, why is it so that there's no congregational participation of the middle aliyah? It's for the same reason. It's because since on a tiny tzibur, it is Uvyoin Pokti Pokadati, every tiny tzibur takes us back to the Chet or Egel. Every time we suffer today is because we've been punished partially in the Chet or Egel. And the Chet or Egel, Levi was not involved. Shev Levi was not involved. Mila Hashem Elai. Vayos v'lov kol b'nei Levi. Mimele, even bizman hazeh, when we have a tiny sibor, when it comes to the middle aliyah, it's smooth sailing. The tzibur does not have to participate, because when the tzibur participates, who are they pointing at? You, the one who got Levi. When they give, you know, when they give the aliyah to the shlishi, it's not to recover, to get shlishi on the tiny tzibur, because the tzibur is saying, you, the oiler, you are responsible. Hashem, Hashem, kol rachum v'chanun. The kohen also. The first aliyah is also a shtickle responsible, because the kohen is not, what?
Skip over
on
the
Tana Sibor.
We skip the
Masayim. We skip, but notice that there's no participation from the Tzibor. Now, what do we take away from this? We take away from this is that the person that gets the Aliyah is very much involved. It's not just, it doesn't make a difference. You get an Aliyah, it doesn't make a difference. I get the Toichacha, I get this Aliyah, I get that Aliyah. That's not so. Chazal were extremely sensitive to not embarrassing the Levi by giving the Levi a chelik of the Egel. Not a Parshas Kisisa, and not even during a Taina Sibur 5 times a year. We have a Taina Sibur at least 5 times a year, the Dalet Tzemos, and the Taina Sester. Am I missing something? Maybe there's even more. We say Vayichal, and anytime you have the fifth, you have a Tainus Esther. It's not part of
Shavuos Matamos, Tisha B'Av,
Asar B'Teves. So 5 times at least you lane, but in all of these 5 times you do not embarrass the Levi. That speaks volumes. That goes what? Who says, I don't know where I saw this. Well,
as a lady, yeah, you're immune to it. You can talk to us all the you want about the angel. I have nothing to do with it.
Exactly.
I'm the one who went in it.
Me, exactly. So therefore, you don't embarrass...
Aaron was a lady.
Okay, therefore, that's why you don't...
He did it after he became a kaya.
So what do you take out of this? What you take out of this is that when you get an aliyah, Chazal were extremely careful when it came to Levi not to insult the Levi with the chet egel, not parashas kisisa, and not 5 times the year when the Levi, when we do tshuva for v'yoyim pokti pokadati, the tzibur is not going to shout and scream at him, oh, Hashem, Hashem, or Salachni Chidvarecha, only the first and the third aliyah. It goes to show that when you get an aliyah, you're very much shaykh to what it says in this kriya. And you, therefore, there's a message, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking to you, there's a direct message involved in what is being said to you. This, L'chore, seems to be a makar for this very popular traditional concept. And just, I want to tell you this, incidentally, is that they said that the Alpha Slobodka, he was the Baal Kriya. He leaned in the yeshiva, he knew his boys inside out. And he would lend, he would call up Talmidim, who he planned it, that he felt had, there was a message in the Aliyah for them, and in fact, he would actually stop and make noises. I once saw Rav Chudna would tell over how he would get a certain Aliyah. The Alta of Slavata called him up, he was the Gabbai, the Alta was the Gabbai, and was the Baal Kriya. So he called the Rav Chudna for a certain Aliyah, it was a very scary Aliyah, and he read the Pasuk in front of the entire yeshiva, he read the pasuk, and he stopped, and he looked at him, and he goes like this, no,
so sharp.
And then he reads the next pasuk,
so sharp.
Wow. And he goes, yeah, that's the alto, he called up the boys, and he played with their minds, he had that incredible koyach. There's something to it. Again, Ali, that this is something that we should take in mind, we should keep in mind. What? Mincha, we read it. Mincha, not Shachas. Shachas we read from Schanan. Okay, let's go to another idea. I saw a beautiful idea from Rav Soloveitchik. This is a very, very powerful idea. Soloveitchik takes note that when Moshe Rabbeinu was told that Klal Yisrael worshipped the Egel, Hashem said, Lech Reid, Lech, 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 Lech Reid, Lech Reid, Ki Shiches Amcha, Amcha, your people have become corrupt. So Moshe said, okay, Ain Ladayan, I can't take action until I see with my own eyes. Okay, I'm gonna go. But Hashem said, go down. You're on top of the mountain. I've given you the luchos, v'aluchos, ma'ase elokim heima. After Hashem says, go down, we begin to talk about, we describe the beauty of the luchos, v'aluchos, ma'ase elokim heima, v'almichta, v'lichta, v'lokim, chodes ala luchos. So Moshe begins to descend. Moshe descends, he sees, he hears with Yoshua that there are koilos, they're singing, there's dancing, and he says, what in the world is going on over here? pasuk says he throws the luchos from his hands. Vayishaber oisam tachas sohar. He throws the luchos from his hands and he shatters them underneath the mountain. The Yalkut Shmoyni, and it's not just the Yalkut Shmoyni, the many Midrashim tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't actually have to throw them. Moshe Rabbeinu, the luchos weighed tons. There's actually calculation. There's some modern calculations of how much luchos must have weighed. If you want to take the size the Torah gives us for the one to the Aron, how big they were, so we can make an estimate. Whatever the estimate was, a few thousand pounds. And it's a few thousand pounds. There's no way a human being can possibly carry the weight of the luchos, even though it's the luchos from Maaseh Elokim. But we'll make an estimation. So the Medrash says that as long as the oisiyos, the holy letters, the hanichtav, nichtav lekim was on the luchos, the oisiyos carried the weight of the stone, of the tablet. But when the oisiyos were parchos b'shamayim, when they came in the vicinity of Klal Yisrael worshipping the eagle, and the kedusha of the luchos did not tolerate the tumah of the eagle, the oisiyos were parchos b'shamayim, all Moshe was left with was the choymer, this matter of stone, which was extremely heavy, and a Moshe Rabbeinu, a human being, can no longer carry this weight, so he just dropped it. It's not that he had to throw it. Vayashlech simply means that he threw it, but the Medrash interprets Vayashlech means that he threw it against his will. He dropped it because he just physically could not carry its weight. Okay? So Rav Soloveitchik gets the following question. After the aftermath of the Chedo Egel, Moshe was mispal, Vayachal Moshe es p'nei Hashem alakav, and v'chulu v'chulu, and Hashem, and he says, Zechol Yavam, and Hashem said, okay, I'm going to forgive you, I forgive you, v'solachto l'avaynenu l'chadaseinu l'chaltanu. Okay, we need a replacement. I want you to hew out of the mountain Luchos, second set, Kori Shoinim. They shall be identical to the first set of tablets. Just tablets. And bring them up to the mountain. Bring them up into the mountain, and there I will etch into the luchos shnios. And Rashi has a beautiful mashal of what this means, like a kala, like a king who goes away and he has a shifcha and he has a kala. This whole long medrash, basically just you have to go and provide the paper and I will provide the text. And Moshe Rabbeinu goes and he cuts out the two luchos and he ascends the mountain with the luchos. Now wait a minute. There were no letters in the luchos, and yet we find Moshe Rabbeinu is ascending the mountain. The Olisa Ata, ascend the mountain with these tablets to Shemayim, and there I will etch into the tablets the Oisiyos. Wait a minute. If these luchos are Karishonos, so it means they have to weigh the same weight as the first set of luchos. And if the first set of luchos, the only reason why Moshe was able to carry them down was because the oisiyos, the nichtav elokim hema, was etched into the tablets, and those oisiyos carry the weight of the luchos. So now when Moshe Rabbeinu on the bottom of the mountain is just cutting out tablets, and the oisiyos have not yet been etched into the tablet, how in the world can Moshe Rabbeinu carry the weight of the luchos? And certainly, how can he go up? If you can't go down, going down is much easier than going up. Going down, you have gravity to help you out. But going up, is infinitely more difficult. And yeah, you find Moshe Rabbeinu was able to ascend with these tablets to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Haloi davar.
Karishainas means similar but not identical.
Okay, so it's not going to be a perfect answer. It's a drush in a chanami. After ultimately say everything was a miracle, everything, Moshe going to Shemayim is not a miracle. Hashem told you to come up, Hashem gave you the koyach. But there's a limud musar. And Rav Soloveitchik says the limud musar is, when you're going up, you can accomplish things that are impossible, that you can't even accomplish when you're going down. When you're going down, even though it's natural, there's gravity, it's easy, but if you are in a spiritual decline, you'll fail, no matter what. When you are in a spiritual ascent, when you're going up, You don't have the oisios. Look at the contrast. When Moshe is going up, which is infinitely, infinitely different, more difficult than going down. It's exactly the same tablets. It's the same thing, Karisha and Ice. And when Moshe, when he was going down, he couldn't carry the weight. He dropped it. And he's going down. Down is easy. Yeah. Going up, it's exactly the same thing. That's the difference. If you're going up, Hashem will grant you siyata d'shmaya to accomplish the impossible. If we can add to that, when we describe Eretz Yisrael, it's always described throughout v'kamta v'olisa el hamokoy masha yivcha Hashem. All over Tanakh, all over Chumash, when we talk about Eretz Yisrael, we're always describing Eretz Yisrael's going up. The nesyonos, the difficulty in accomplishing, in establishing Eretz Yisrael, is impossible. The miracles that Klal Yisrael in this generation have achieved in Eretz Yisrael are off the charts. Why had, how have they been able to accomplish the impossible? To bring out of a desert land, to produce a beautiful Eretz Yisrael, how is it possible? It's because you're going up. When you're going up, you could accomplish the impossible. Look at the muscle of the luchos. Going down, you couldn't do anything. Going up, same exact thing. You could accomplish any time you'll find in the Torah the word aliyah. You're from the b'nei aliyah. You want to be a person who wants to go higher to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He will give you the siyat of the Shema to accomplish the impossible.
This is once presented to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, you know, the Satmar Shita, that the building Eretz Yisrael was avoided from the Sitra Acha. So he had a simple response. He said, I have a choice. It could be avoided the Sitra Acha, or it could be avoided the Rebbe Shalom gave us a
Matana, yeah.
So what's my choice? I should say it's avoided. I'd rather say it's avoided the Rebbe Shalom.
Of course.
When it's Aliyah, I want to say it's Aliyah, and you want to say it's a Yerida.
Okay, let's go to the end of the parasha. Let's discuss, yeah.
You can see Aliyah, so without a Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't help. You see, after the Maaseh of the Barak, remember, people wanted to go up.
Hashem told them not to. The Mapilim. The Mapilim. Hashem tells you not to do it. It's not going to work. Then Hashem is telling you not to do it. I mean, what do you want? Here Hashem is telling Moshe, go up. He's going up with the same tablets. You don't find anything supernatural yet. Because the oisius for Hamichtav, Michtav Lekim, is not yet on these tablets. It's exactly the same tablets. And yet, going down, he couldn't. Going up, Haloi Dovar, it's a very beautiful observation. You see this koyach, you can accomplish things when you go up, and you can't accomplish when you're going down. Okay, let's go to the end of the parasha. This is interesting. It appears the machlokes between Rashi and the Ibn Ezra in regarding the masveh. Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from the mountain. When he comes down from the mountain after he receives the second luchos, he beredes Moshe mihar Sinai. Ushnei luchos ha'edus biyad Moshe beredeto min ha'har. Moshe lo yoda ki Koran or ponav bedabero ito. Moshe was unaware that his face shone. It gave forth light. The karnei hot. Vayar arod uvnei uchol bnei yisrael es Moshe. Vhinei koner pana. Vayi reu migeshe selof. They were afraid to come near Moshe. Very powerful Rashi. Rashi on this pasuk writes, Bore, come and see, kama godol koicha shel avera. Look how powerful is the look how dangerous is the power of avera. Sha'ad shaloi poshto yideh be'avera mahu oimer. What does it say concerning Klal Yisrael before they worship the Egel? Umarei kevoid Hashem ke'esh echeles b'roi shohar le'enei b'nei Yisrael. V'lo yireim v'lo mizdazim. They were not afraid. They were not terrified. Umisha also as for Egel. Now when they worship the Egel, even Moshe Rabbeinu, even when they saw one person with afmi karnei hoyde, just from the horns, just from a small glow on the face of Moshe, already vayiru migesha selav, they already were afraid. Mikarnei hoyde shlo Moshe hoyu mismartiim umizdazim. They were terrified. They had to run away. Haloi Dovar. This is what it says over here is Boy Urei Koicha Shel Aveira. Now, the pasuk goes on to tell us what happened. So they told Moshe, we're afraid to come near you. So Moshe, he says, okay, I'll put on a masseh. Now, the sequence of events, very clear from the pasuk, is that even though they were afraid, Moshe says, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid, come close. Come close, and I'll learn with you, you don't have to worry. After Moshe finished talking with them and learning, then it says, Moshe put on the masveh. And Rashi, I'm not going to go through the Rashi, Rashi makes it crystal clear that Moshe only wore the masveh when he was not speaking with them in learning. Right. Now, if you learn Rashi at face value, what it seems to indicate is that Claudius Moshe's face glowed 24/7. Moshe was always in a state of kar nehod, always in a state of kedusha. Klal Yisrael were terrified, were petrified of this. The only time they were not afraid is when they spoke in learning. When Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to Klal Yisrael in learning, he taught them Torah. Then the kedusha of Talmud Torah took away the yira, took away the fear. They were able to look at Moshe and to see and to behold the kar nehod. But when the shir was over, recess, time to leave, they're no longer engaged in Talmud Torah. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu, he's glowing. Now they were afraid. They no longer had the zechus of Torah to protect them. They were afraid. So how could they deal with Moshe in earthly matters? Moshe had to put on a masveh. This is seemingly how the Rashi learns simple shot in the pasuk. The Ibn Ezra, it's a fascinating Ibn Ezra. He has a whole different shot in why Moshe wore the masveh. Ibn Ezra says that when Moshe Rabbeinu taught Klal Yisrael Torah, Moshe's face glowed. But when Moshe stopped learning Torah, His face did not glow. Even Moshe only had the kar nehod b'shas Talmud Torah. So why then did Moshe Rabbeinu need to put on a masveh when they stopped learning? So the Ibn Ezra says because it will be a zilzal in looking at their Rebbe when his face is not glowing. In other words, in order to maintain the covet of Moshe Rabbeinu, it's not a covet to see your Rebbe in pajamas. It's not. That's the way it is. It's not a covet. A Rebbe has to always be in a state of covet. So since Moshe Rabbeinu, now seemingly what Ibn Ezra is saying is, it seems that until Klal Yisrael worshipped the Egel, the state of kar nehod was upon the entire Klal Yisrael 24/7, even when they were not studying Torah. This I'm extrapolating. I'm assuming this is what he means on a very simple level. But after the Chet Egel, they were only zoicha to the kar nehod b'shas Talmud Torah, but when it was not shas of Talmud Torah, then there was no kar nehod. They were afraid of Moshe. Moshe pacified them. Don't be afraid. When you'll come near me and you'll learn Torah, you won't need to be afraid of the kar nehod. But Moshe still needed a masveh. They should not see Moshe Rabbeinu without the kar nehod when they were not learning, because it would be a zilzal in seeing their Rebbe without his kar nehod shining. Now, I want to suggest a drush that you can combine both Rashi and the Ibn Ezra. What do I mean? But let's assume the Ibn Ezra was correct. When Moshe Rabbeinu was not learning Torah, was not teaching Klal Yisrael Torah, there were no kar nehod. But yet, before the Chet HaEgel, there was no need for Moshe Rabbeinu to have a masveh. What does it mean here in Rashi when Rashi says, "Bo ure the koyach of avera, bo ure kamo gadol koycha shel avera"? What it means is that before Klal Yisrael worshipped the Egel, when they saw Moshe Rabbeinu dark, without in a matziv of hester upon him, it's no big deal. Klal Yisrael was on the madrega of holiness; there were never any doubts. In this world, even I'm making an assumption, this is a chiddush to say such thing, but even this world, it's not always, the lights are not always on. even in times of when the Shekhinah is Mushar and Klal Yisrael. There are times of Hester Panim, and there are times of Gilui Panim. Sometimes Hashem reveals himself, sometimes Hashem holds himself. The difference between the people who have a moon and don't have a moon is that when there's a time of Hester Panim, do you still have faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Are you still able to have respect? Are you still able to have emunah? Before Klal Yisrael sinned, when the Chet HaEgel, there was no need for Moshe Rabbeinu to wear a masveh when Moshe did not have Karnei Hod. Klal Yisrael were able to have the same respect for Moshe Rabbeinu when they saw him in pajamas. Kaviyach. Because when you're on a very high madrig of Kedusha, and there's a time of Hester Panim, so there's a Hester Panim, so what? Just because HaKadosh Baruch was not, we know Hashem is there, we fully appreciate the Kedusha, and we are Maminim B'nei Maminim. So even when Moshe Rabbeinu, his face is dark, and he looks just like any one of us, he looks the same as any other individual in Klal Yisrael, so what? Moshe Rabbeinu is Moshe Rabbeinu. They appreciated the full Kiddush of Moshe Rabbeinu. But after the Chet HaEgel, this is Boy Ure'ei Koichoi Shel Avera. The Koich of Avera is for the times of Hester Panim. When things are good, when it's Yom Tov, and when it's Purim, and everything is wonderful, even if a person is a Baal Avera, you can still be on a high and connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the Koich HaShel Avera Boy Ure'ei is that when the Yom Tov is over, and you go back to your daily routine, and you don't fully see the Koich, the Yad HaShem, Moshe Rabbeinu was no longer with the Karnei Hod, Moshe Rabbeinu looks like an ordinary person, and you still have fear for Moshe Rabbeinu, it should still be a madrega of Ayiru Migesha Seilov. You lost it. You won't be able to have that amunah in Hester Panim. Moshe Rabbeinu is going to need a masveh at that point in time in order that Klal Yisrael's amunah in Moshe should not be weakened. This is the Koich HaShel Avera. So I'm trying to combine over here Rashi and the Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra is right and Rashi is right. Ibn Ezra says Moshe Rabbeinu, Ibn Ezra, Moshe were a masveh. They were a masveh when he was not teaching them Torah. That's where he was. And Rashi is telling us, the expression of until the Avera took place, when Moshe Rabbeinu was not teaching Torah, and there was no Karnei Hod, they were still the same afraid of Moshe Rabbeinu. They had the same Yiras HaRoimim was of Moshe Rabbeinu, even during times of Hester Panim. But the Koich HaShel Avera weakens a person during times of Hester Panim, that now you don't know what to do, now you're confused, now you're worried, now we need a masveh during times of Hester Panim. Yeah.
How is it possible that his face was shining?
Yeah.
That was a spiritual thing.
Yeah.
How can a masveh glow that you had disappear or was covered up?
Can leave it only a little yeah. The master was when he was not.
That was a spiritual thing.
A spiritual arm. When it was a spiritual R, Moshe did not wear the masveh. Moshe only wore the masveh when there was no spiritual R.
But he did cover it that the glow should not be seen.
Yeah. No. He did not cover it. When the glow was seen and he taught Klal Yisrael Torah, he did not wear the masveh. That's what Rashi says. Rashi says that when he taught Klal Yisrael Torah and his face glowed, he did not wear the masveh. So they should see the glow. And at that moment in time, they were not afraid because the zchus of Torah took away the fear. When Moshe Rabbeinu, the Ibn Ezra says that when Moshe Rabbeinu was not glowing, when he was not teaching Torah, and his face was not glowing, it would be a zilzal for Klal Yisrael to see Moshe Rabbeinu in a state where his face was not glowing. They would lose respect for him. They would say that Moshe Rabbeinu was no different than us. That's when Moshe Rabbeinu needed the master. What I'm trying to suggest is that this is the difference between before the Chet HaEgel and after the Chet HaEgel. Before the Chet HaEgel, even when his face was not glowing, they had the same respect for Moshe Rabbeinu. Because without Chet, a person is able to see the Yad Hashem even during times of Hester upon him. Even when a person's face is not glowing. After the chedo egel, a person's emunah is weakened. You only see Hashem when your face is glowing. But when the face is not glowing, you have a hard time seeing. And then there's a possibility where you're going to lose respect because you're no different than anyone else. Okay, let's go to another idea. We have here, going back to the chedo egel, Moshe comes down, he sees what has happened, he calls over Aaron, and he says, what in the world is going on here? The people have sinned a very, very great sin. Question is, why is this called a very great sin? They sinned. A sin is a sin. What makes a sin great? What makes a sin not great? Gedolah has a connotation that is something extra special. So Rav Schwab, I think it's Rav Schwab, maybe it's others, he explains the chet, the greatness of the chet is because they use their earrings to make the egel. Let's review exactly what happened. People come to Moshe, to Aaron, and they said to Aaron, Aaron, Moshe Rabbeinu has disappeared, he's gone to Shemayim, we don't know what happened to him, we need a person to lead us. So Aaron says, okay, you want to do something, but Aaron sees that they're going to kill him, the same way they killed Hur. He says, Parku nizme hazahav asher biozne nishechem b'neichem uvno seichem v'hovi u'eloi. Go to your wife, go to your children, and take off their earrings. Aaron assumed that this would be a delay tactic because he knew that women are not going to give away their jewelry so quickly. So therefore, they'll fight about it, it'll take at least a day, and by that time Moshe Rabbeinu will come and everything will be fine and good. Take off nizme hazahav asher biozne the ears, nisheichem, of your wives, ubineichem, your sons, that means the boys, the little boys, they wore earrings. Okay, you buy a bar mitzvah present, you buy it for the bar mitzvah boy, you buy some nice pair of earrings. For bar mitzvah boy. That's what it says. That's what it says. No, that's what it says. Ubineichem, uvinoiseichem, viviweiloi. Okay? So, what happened? They went to their wives, and the wife says, no way. No way, we're not giving away our earrings. And the children, the wives probably said, well, not, don't take the earrings of the children either. So the men were desperate. Vayis baruku kolam es nizne hazahav asher bioz nehem. So they took off their own earrings. The pasuk is clear as day that the men, adult men, in the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim wore earrings. Okay, undeniable fact. They wore earrings. Adult men wore earrings. They took off their own earrings and they gave Vayoviu el Aharon. Aaron, of course, was very disturbed. Was very disturbed. What is going on? The people were so dead. They gave away their own earrings for the Egel Hazov. So the Mefarshim explain. I think it's Rav Schwab. It could be that it's others as well. They say that this idea that what is the significance of the earrings? Why indeed were they wearing earrings? The answer is because they beautify the ears that heard Hashem saying Anochi Hashem Elokecha Li Bnei Yisrael Avodim. In other words, the earrings, just like we know, there's a parsha of Nirtza. Why do we take the slave after 6 years and bore a hole in his ear? Chazal tell us because the ear that heard Hashem and Har Sinai that say Kili b'nei Yisrael avodim v'holach zeh v'kona odon li'atzmo, it should be bored, it should be punished. That same hole that is bored by the Nirtza is the hole upon which a member of Klal Yisrael puts an earring in. Because
so how
I'm.
Differentiate. It would have to be a different
area. It would have to be a different hole. But yeah, where this? Let's not go there. Let's not go there. Okay. But the point is, there is a relationship between the parish of Nirtza and the earrings that Klal Yisrael wore at this point in time. They beautified their ears because these were the ears that heard the Chol Ha'om Royim Es HaKolos. They heard the sound of Hashem give the Torah to Klal Yisrael. These ears deserve to be beautified. The Nirtza who has failed in the beautification of his ears have to be punished, have to be bored. But a regular person who has observed, who has fulfilled the message, his ears have to be beautified. Okay, so they took off the ears. So therefore, this is exactly, this is now, the Mefarshim saying, why we understand, it's a very great sin, because how could it be the object that is used to beautify, to celebrate Anochi Hashem Elokecha, that same piece of jewelry that's there to beautify the ear that heard Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Kili B'nei Yisrael Avodim, now goes, and that piece of jewelry is being used to fashion an Egel Hazov, Ela Elohecha Yisrael. If Stam, they would just take jewelry, they would take silver and gold, whatever they would find, and they would make an Egel, do whatever they would do, the Chayk would not necessarily see be so bad. At least there would be some boundaries. There would be some boundaries. We worship Hashem, we have a Yetzirah. So we took some gold and we made an Avodah Zarah and we worship the Avodah Zarah. But to take the very object which is used to celebrate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, to beautify the ear and to use that itself as a source for the Egel Hazav, Ela Elohecha Yisrael, there's no boundaries. There's no limit to what you would do. And that makes the Chet Chato'om Chato'o Gidoyla. Yeah.
I'm thinking that along these lines that it's really the idea of a betrayal. Because the other time that we see a Chet referred to as a Chato'om Gidoyla, you see in Yosef with Eshes Potiphar.
Yeah.
How could he says, how can I betray value.
Right, betrayal.
So I'm thinking of something like that here.
Because it's the same object that was used, and there's no boundaries. It's shocking. If you can do this, take that piece of jewelry. There's nothing you wouldn't do. There's no limit to how low you will go. Now, I just want to expand upon this. Let's now take a step back. So now let's try to understand. So why then did the women? Now that we have this insight from the commentators of why it's a chato'om chato'o gidola, let's go backwards and try to understand why then did the women not give their earrings. Aaron was very clever. Aaron was brilliant. He says, okay, we're going to make an eagle. Aaron could have said to him, why don't you go and bring me your toasters? Why don't you go bring me, we need some metals. We need some gold and silver. Aaron says, bring me the earrings. Bring me the earrings of your wife. Of your wife. Aaron, you're telling them to go take, the women also heard at Har Sinai, Enochi Hashem Elokecha. Aaron is telling, go take the object that was being used to beautify the ear that heard Enochi Hashem Elokecha. What is Aaron thinking? The answer is Aaron knew the women wouldn't, if there's one thing the women would not do, the women have boundaries. The women would never go so far to take the jewelry that is beautifying the ear that hurt. Now why was Aaron, why was it taka true that the women did not take off the earrings and the unexpected happened that the men did? It's very simple. Because in Parashas Yisro, right before, as the Hagdama to Matan Torah, Hashem says to Moshe, oh, in the opening psukim of Matan Torah, Koi soimar livnei Yisrael, Koi soimar livnei Yaakov, v'sageid livnei Yisrael. Rashi comments, this is the source of why every girl's school is called the Beis Yaakov. Koi soimar livnei Yaakov, elu hanoshim. What? When it was the Sageid Livnei Yisrael Elu Ho'anoshim, Amira is Loshen Racha, soft. When you speak to women, you don't shout. You speak gently, soft, calmly. Men, Gidin is hard, sinews, they're hard, they're rough. And Rashi there elaborates that the Oinshim tell them about the punishments, tell them about the Dikduke HaMitzvos, all of the hard hardships. I'm taking too long to find the Pasuk now. But Rashi there elaborates the difference between Amira Lebeis Yaakov and Hagoda Libnei Yisrael. To the men, Moshe took a stick and beat them over their head and told them there are Tayag Mitzvos, and if you don't follow the Tayag Mitzvos, you're going to be held accountable, you're going to be punished. There's going to be a lot of suffering. The women, he spoke gently. We have a principle. Divrei Chachomim Benachas Nishmoel. When you speak gently to a person, the words are accepted. The women who heard Torah, their ears heard Torah through the koyach of Koy Soimar. The whole episode, the whole event of Matan Torah to women was given the Loshon Racha. Koy Soimar Leveis Yaakov. To Beis Yaakov. They accepted the Torah, they heard the B'loshon Racha. Divrei Chachomim Benachas Nishmoim. Nimela, they heard it for real. They heard it for real. They beautified those ears that heard it and accepted it. There's no way in the world they would take off those earrings that beautified the ears that heard the words of Nachas of Koisoyma Leves Yaakov and give it over to the eagle. The men were not spoken to with Nachas. They were spoken to with harshness. It had to be. That's the way it is. It had to be. But there's a trade-off. And the trade-off is, since Hashem spoke to men with harshness, the ears didn't really absorb it the same degree as the women accepted it. So Mela, when they were beautifying their ears, it wasn't a real beautification. It was just on the surface. It was superficial. It wasn't a beauty that was a true beauty. It was custom jewelry. It wasn't the real thing. It wasn't the real thing. The nail, it wasn't so hard for the men to take off their earrings and give it over to the eagle. So this idea explains, we're combining over here what it says in the Yisro with this idea in Parashas Kisisa to explain the difference between the men and the women. The chato gidoyla, the earrings beautified the ears, and the difference between the men and the women and how they received the Torah, Amira, Lashon Racha, versus Gagoda, Lashon Kosha.
Okay.
Vayidab is a harsh dibur. It's a harsh expression, indeed. It's a harsh expression. Shabbos, it's interesting, the two parashas, Shabbos is given Lashon Amira. The first Aliyah, it's Vayomer Hashem El Moshe Leba. There are not that many psukim in the Torah that begin with that expression. 99% of psukim are Vayidaber Hashem El Moshe Leba. Here in Parashas Kisisa, the end of the first Aliyah, it's Vayomer Hashem El Moshe Leba. Amira Shabbos is, the last section is the Miss of Shabbos, Ushmart Mesa Shabbos is Lashon Softness. Okay, now I want to give another explanation of why it was a chato'om chato'o gidola. How exactly did they make the egel? So we know that they threw in a Shem Hashem, but the pasuk, there's a difficult pasuk, Vayotzar Oso Bacheret. Let me see if I can find the pasuk quickly. Vayotzar Oso Bacheret. That's what they used. The gold they took out of Mitzrayim, they made earrings, and from the earrings they gave over to worship the eagle. And it was not the gold of Yitzias Mitzrayim, it was the gold of Bizas Hayam. Chazal make it clear the gold that they took from the Egyptians at Kriyas Yamsuf is what they used to make earrings and other things, and those earrings went to make the eagle. Now it's when they threw in. They gave Vayisparku kol aves nizmeh hazova asher biyozneyem Vayoviu ha'aron Vayikach miyodam. He took it from their hands. Vayyotzar oso bacheret Vayaseyu egel masecha Vayoyimu eilu elohecha yishol asher he'alucha mi'eretz Mitzrayim. What does it mean, these three words, Vayyotzar oso bacheret? So Rashi has two interpretations. The second one is probably the more popular. Vayyotzar means to create. They formed bacheret. Bacheret is a stick. It's a tool. It's a tool which you make shapes. Molten engraving tool. They had molten gold, and they took an engraving tool and they formed it. They moved. They made shapes. They make it look like a calf. It was a tool. Vayotzar, they formed it tsura with an engraving, sculpted with an engraving tool. Very simple. That's Rashi's second interpretation. Yet Rashi, in the first interpretation, has a very different interpretation. He says Vayotzar means to cover. Let me read you the exact words. Vayotzar pasuk gimel. Vayotzar oisoi bacheret yesh to targmo b'shnei ponim ha'echad vayotzar loshon kishira to tie means to tie bacheret loshon sudar a handkerchief a sheet and what it means is they made the egel and they wrapped it up, they packaged it.
It
was made of gold. They put gold into a pot, they made the egel, and it's done. And after they made the egel, they wrapped it up, no one should see. Vayotzar oiso bacheret. Let me read the words again. Vayotzar vayikach miyodam. Aaron took the money, the gold. Vayotzar oiso bacheret. And Aaron, he wrapped up all the money. He took all the gold and he tied it up. He tied it up in a sheet.
He became an egel afterwards. First,
and then he made into an egel. Right? Then he made into an egel.
He didn't put.
He took the money. Vayotzar. He took. According to Rashi's first interpretation, is he took the money. Vayikach miyodam. He took their earrings. He took their earrings and he deposited the earrings in a sheet. He spread out a sheet. He took the earrings and he tied it up. And he knotted it. And then from that, Vayasehu Egel Masecha. Why is it necessary for the pasuk to tell us that what I'm telling you is a drush? That's not pshat. It's a drush, it's a machshava, a rayon. Why is it necessary for the pasuk to say here that Aaron he took miyodam, he took their earrings, Vayotzar Oso Bacheret. And he wrapped it up in a shmata, he tied it up, and from that, Vayasehu Egel Masecha. Well, the pasuk doesn't tell you all the details. They threw it into a pot, a boiling pot.
Aaron's interpretation later is different. When he relates it, it says Vayasehu Egel Masecha. It makes it sound like
the by itself. It was. Rashi says they were magicians, and they put in Aleishur. They put in the plate that Moshe used to retrieve the body of Yosef. Aleishur. The Torah is not giving you all of the details.
So
but
it happened by an ace. Why would Hashem make an ace for such?
There's a koyach of kishuf. There's a koyach of kishuf in this world. The sitra achra. There's a koyach of ra in this world. A real life koyach of evil. So the question is, according to Rashi's first interpretation, is it really necessary? Anyway, the pasuk is not telling you the details of exactly all the details of how, what kind of pot they put it into, how hot was the pot, and exactly how much gold there was, and what shemos they used of a koyach satumah to make this happen. It doesn't give you all the details. Is it really necessary for the pasuk to tell us that Aaron, he took all of the earrings and he put it in a shmata and he tied it up, he put vayotzar so bacheret? Is it really necessary? So I want to suggest a drush. It's not really accurate. I realize now that it's less accurate than I thought it was before. But I'll tell it to you anyway because I prepared it. Is part of the chet to egel was, the pasuk is saying, is they wanted it to be hidden. We know that at the time of Yoshiyahu, Yoshiyahu was right to be Melech HaMashiach. Yoshiyahu refused to allow Paro Necho to pass through the land. And the Navi Yeshaya and Yirmiyahu told him, well, in a conversation, he was mistaken. What was the mistake? People were worshipping idols secretly, behind closed doors. Yoshiyahu sent inspectors to all of the Jewish homes. They checked, there was no. But the idol was hiding in plain sight. It was etched into the door in two parts. When you open the door to come in, you don't see it. But when you close the door, the two parts form, and there it is, there is the idol. People were living a double life. On the outside, they were tzaddikim, yeshakol, and black hat, everything is fine and good. And behind closed doors, you're a different person. You're living a secret life. You do things that no one knows about. Built in, the Torah is emphasizing, built into the chet to egel is vayotzar oso bacheret. It was all wrapped up, it was tied, all of the earrings, all of the money, it was a secret slush fund. All the money that was given to do the avera, you know, you have to follow the money trail. You got to follow the money. When people do averas, people commit crimes. Crimes cost money. You can't just do a crime for free. You want to commit an act of terror. It's expensive. You got to find the money, the cost of doing this avera, off the books. Cash only. Cash only. Hidden secret funds.
Slush
funds. You're not going to find it. That's what it says. The people wanted to sin. And the way we're going to sin is there's going to be no money trail. Vayotzar oso bacheret. It's going to be hidden in a shmata, a sudar, a handkerchief. It's going to be tied, which has a connotation. I'm suggesting this. It's hidden away. If you want to do an avera, Chazal say, we're not malachim. We're not malachim. If you want to do an avera, there's a way to do an avera. Put on black clothing and go to a place that's far away, where no one knows you, and you have to do the Avera. But don't present, don't make believe. Don't go and don't, if you have to, don't be a faker. Don't live a double life. Built into the chet, chotoho mazeh chato'o gidoy lo. What's the chatog that we find in the time of the Chum Bayis? Yoshiyahu, he was so close, he was so close. The chait of the door was, they were sinning Avodah Zarah. Mamash Avodah Zarah, it was in secret. It was behind closed doors. Where is that root? Where do you find the sherish of that? You find it here. You find it here. Vayotzar oso bacheret. The sherish of the chait had to be betzina. Had to be betzina. That is not. That adds to the chait. If you acknowledge, I'm an alcoholic, right? I acknowledge this is my problem. That's already half of the process. To hide it is when you're in denial is a very great problem. Okay, let's go to another idea. Another quick idea. We have in this week's parasha, the very beginning of the parasha, the Ketores. What's very bizarre is the Ketores was already presented in last week's parasha. At the end of Parashas Tetzaveh, we learn about the Mizbeach, and after you learn about the Mizbeach, it says, oh, what are you going to do on the Mizbeach Hazov? On the Mizbeach Hazov, the Nasata is Lufnei HaPoreches, Hashem HaRoidus, Lufnei HaKapoyres, the Hikter Olav Aharon Ketores Sanim. Ba-Baker, Behetivoes, Saneros Yaktirene, he's going to light the Ketores. And on this mizbeach, make sure you don't offer ketores zora oil mincha. So in the end of Parshas Tetzaveh, very very carefully, we are taught all about the mitzvah of haktoras haketores. And as if we forgot, we come a week later. Parash Kisisa, we learn about Machsa Shekel, we learn about the Kiyar, we learn about the Shemen Hamishcha. And then, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayomer Hashem El Moshe Kach Lucha Samim Notof Ushecheles Vechel Bnei Samu Lebnei Zakobam Vayeh V'yosisa Oisa Ketores. Why couldn't these two things be joined together? Why couldn't the additional details of the four ingredients, which turn into 11, or we discuss four, really, there's five, and then there's 10, and then there's 11. Why couldn't these few additional details be added in the Parshas Tetzaveh? We could have saved over here a whole section. We can make the parasha a little bit shorter. What is this all about? Second question, why in Parshas Tetzaveh is it the Ketores is miyuchit for Aaron? The emphasis is you're going to make a Mizbeach. The Mizbeach Hazav is the Keser Kahuna, and the only one to offer on the Mizbeach Hazav is going to be Aaron HaKohen. In fact, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a fascinating idea. He says that even in this parasha we know that the Avodah was originally given to the firstborns, and after as a punishment of the Chet HaEgel, it was given to Shevet Levi. Hashem, through killing Mil Hashem Eli, they became the new Kohanim, they're the ones who became the Avodah. So it was taken away from the firstborns, and it was given to the Kohanim. Rav Moshe says there were two things that were never taken away from them, that were never meant for the firstborns. There were two parts of the Avodah that from day one were only miyuchad for Kohanim. And that is the lighting of the menorah. Well, not really the lighting, the preparation, atavas haner, the base of the preparation of the menorah, the menorah, avod of the menorah, whatever that entails, and the ketores. The Bidei Kahuna, of course. Well, Bidei Kahuna, and before the building of the Mishkan, no, would have been anyone who was the avod. Anyone who did the avod would be the Bidei Kahuna. Moshe did not use it. Moshe was like, Nechram did not use. But he says the Shevet Levi was designated to do two things even before the Chet HaEgel: to light the Ketores and to light the menorah. After the Chet HaEgel, everything now went to the Kohanim, all of the Korbanos. But the question here is, in Parashas Kisisa, when it talks about the Ketores, it makes no mention of Kohanim. In fact, it says to Moshe, you Moshe. And then it says, for Gans Klal Yisrael, Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Kach Lecho. You, take for you. What do you mean you? Moshe, you're not allowed, you're not a Kohen, you're not to do the Avodah. Why is it Lecho? And then it goes on to say, V'yosis Eso Ketores, V'shachatem Min Hodeik, then it says, B'yol Hashem V'chashem Kodesh, Kodeshti Elohem, V'yaketores Asher Yaseh. There's no mention here of anything about Kohanim. It would seem to be that this is for the entire Klal Yisrael. V'shachakta mimen hadik v'nasata mimen lefnei u'udus b'yom ha'ashayi v'l'choshom ha'kodesh ha'kilochem kodesh tiyel l'cho la'ashem. What's going on? So I want to suggest the following answer. Mefarshim take note that the Torah only gives four ingredients for the Ketores. Everything else, the additional eight ingredients, the additional seven ingredients we know from Drasha. What are the four ingredients? Four ingredients are Natov, Shecheles, Chelbina, and Levona. The Rosh Eitevel Sof Natov Nun, Shecheles Shin, Chelbina, Ches, Levona Zaka, spell the word Shulchan. Shulchan. The table. There's only one table in the Mishkan. The Shulchan, the Lechem upon it. What does the Shulchan represent? Malchus. Who's the Melech? Moshe Rabbeinu. Malchus. Parnasa. Malchus. Parshas Tetzaveh. There's a very important detail about the Ketores. It doesn't say the ingredients, but it says twice, when do you light the Ketores? Uvehalois aharoin es haneirois. Yak bein harbaim yak tirena. Baboker baboker behetivo es haneiros yak tirena. The emphasis in Parshas Tetzave is the Ketores is linked to the menorah. Parshas Kisisa, the Ketores is linked to the Shulchan for two reasons. Number one, Shulchan is the Rosh Tevos. Number two, the Shulchan is the Keser Malchus. Moish is the Keser Malchus. V'ato kach l'cho. You, Moshe, you the Melech. Parash Tetzave, it's Aharon. V'halos Aharon es haneiros yak tirena. So what do we take away from this? And also, what is the Mizbeach? Where is the Mizbeach Hazav? It's right smack in the center, aligned between the menorah on the left and the Shulchan on the right. What do we take away from this? The Ketores is an enhancement. It is the Reach Nichoyach of the menorah, and it's the Reach Nichoyach of the Shulchan. There are two dinim in the Ketores. The menorah represents Talmud Torah, to teach, a malamet, to teach Hashem's Torah. Who has the role of teaching Hashem's Torah? Who has that role? Aaron HaKoyen, the Kohanim, they are the teachers of Klal Yisrael. The Shulchan represents Parnasa, the Melech. The role of the Melech is to provide the country with its the Gashmias, with the needs. Parnasa, the old Parnasa. The Mizbeach Hazav is the Nachas Ruach. The message is, whatever line of work you engage in, whether you're a Kli Kodesh, you're Isaac in teaching Torah, it has to be raw. You just do your job. There has to be Nachas Ruach, a Reach Nichoyach. The Ketores produce Reach Nichoyach. If you're in law, your profession, you're engaged on the other side of the field, you're involved in Parnasa, in the support of Torah, it also has to be with a Reach Nichoyach. There are two different dimensions to the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach Hazav that produces the Reach Nichoyach, it's in the middle. It's a tool that enhances Uvehalois Arnes Haneros Yak Tireno, Parshas Tetzaveh. Parshas Tetzaveh is the Parsha of the Kohanim, and Parshas Kisisa is for everyone else. Everyone else has the same duty to bring a Kadosh Baruch Hu Reach Nechayach in their line of work. Okay, we'll stop here. Have a wonderful Shabbos.